you not see this as a problem? Because they are looking to maximize profit during the pandemic.
Alex Harmon, we want to thank you for being with us with Public Citizen, author of the new report, Prime Gouging, How Amazon Raised Prices to Profit from the Pandemic. And that does it for our show. We'll link to that at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Noreen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadora. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us. Wear a mask. Stay safe.
Stay safe. She was going to say, stay safe. This is WUSB Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. And we're going to start a little bit early because Democracy Now! Started late, so we don't want to miss any of our show. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here. Right here.
Yeah, we should get you a chair, shouldn't we?
It's the least of our concerns.
Well, I mean, you know, to have a radio co-host sitting on the floor for the entire hour just seems...
I don't hate it. It's not...
It seems beneath
awful.
Us. It seems like something we should be able to...
Well, I am beneath us and below the board.
Listeners, if you have a chair that you can spare, please write to us, otw@2600.com, because...
No, I'm fine. I have a cushion. I'm here.
What has holes in it, for one thing. Listeners, if you have a cushion,
Leave my cushion out of this.
Well, we can do better, is what I'm trying to say. This is what I always try to say to people. We can do better. And it never seems to happen. So a chair and a cushion.
Like I said,
anything else you need? Or?
No, I'm giving of myself fully to community radio.
Well, that's what
I'm
worried about.
Have.
You're giving too fully. You're giving your all, everything. There's nothing left.
No, there's stuff left.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Well, I mean, all right, you want to open up that kettle of fish. Okay, first of all, I want to apologize to everybody, because I haven't been getting back to anybody. A lot of people trying to reach me for one reason or another. Told you the check's in the mail, or you know, I'll show up next time. Whatever you know, the excuse is, I've just been incredibly busy dealing with odds and ends issues.
I helped.
You sure did, yes.
I did at least one odd, maybe two ends.
And I've been getting back to you. When you ask me a question directly to my face, usually I answer. Usually. Sometimes I don't.
Sure.
And it's because I'm busy if I don't.
No, I know when you're busy.
I'm busy doing things. So since the conference ended, I've just been basically doing all those things that, because we were organizing the conference, didn't have time to do, and also because it's a global pandemic, didn't have time to do or desire to do. And that includes things like, you know, going to the doctor, getting a checkup, going to the dentist, following up on things. And last week, as you recall, or you may not recall, we were on tape. Tape. We still say tape. We still say dial. We still say record. And these things don't exist.
You should say we were on tapeless.
Whatever we were on, we weren't live. We're live now. Although, technically, we're actually a few seconds later because...
Don't.
Feel like I have to be accurate.
No, it is. No, it's fine.
Kyle, in this day and age... Every little fact has to be accurate or they get you.
If they know, they know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, let's just keep going.
But now they know because...
Forget it.
When you talk into the microphone, it doesn't just go over the transmitter. It has to go through that little device and then go to another device and then be processed and sent to the FCC for approval and then sent out. So it's about 5 seconds, 6 seconds delay, I think. There's no way to really tell. Well, it depends how you're listening. If you're listening on the radio, it's a lot quicker. Actually, it's only a millisecond on the radio, but if you're listening on the internet, then it can be like 30 seconds.
But we're more live than we were, and that's the point.
Yeah, exactly. Where was I going with that?
Well,
hey, this is usually where we start the show with the drums. You know?
Used the.
We
the
gained
time
all
you
that
had
time. We gained all that extra
from
time
from the pre-recording to be in the future, and now you're telling about where you were in the future, which is now
past. Okay, so yeah, last week we were not live because I had a doctor's appointment that Tuesday afternoon, late afternoon. And I was worried that maybe it would run into overtime, or maybe there'd be people ahead of me, and then there'd be all this mad race to get on the air, and I'd be all flustered. So we recorded it the night before.
It worked out better.
It was fine. Some people said they prefer us not live. Well,
yeah.
They said it in a different way, but you know what I mean. Yesterday, I finally, if you've been following the saga, and by far this is what people are most interested in on our show, is my dental exploits. Last year, if you recall, we left everything in October when I had what was known as an amputation. I forgot about that, actually. The show is a really good kind of diary for me. Bible, yeah.
Biopic.
A biopic, yes. That sort of updates me as to what I'm doing in my life. So I had to go back. Yeah, I got an amputation. But the spring before that, the spring of 2019, I had an extraction. I was going to get an implant. But that got pushed into the beginning of 2020, and then the pandemic happened, so I didn't really have the desire to go out and get dental procedures done. So it turns out I decided to follow up on that, and I feel bad because I kind of cheated on my dentist by going to another dentist who specialized in this.
I keep telling you, it's okay. You can shop around.
It doesn't feel like it's okay. It doesn't feel, and I keep getting all these phone calls that hang up, you know, and I know it's him. I know he's angry. But the other guy specializes in this, so I figured, and it's also a lot cheaper too. So I figured, you know, this might be the better way to go. I just wanted, you know, the opinion. And so he had to call my first dentist to get records, and it's a very awkward.
That's
situation.
When you started getting the packages left and
yeah, the thing on the smoke on in the paper bag on the doorstep. Childish, but I understand why. I understand. And then, you know, literally the day that I saw this new guy, part of a filling fell out, and I wasn't sure, what dentist do I go to now? Who do I ask about this? Do I go to the first one or the second one? So it's been a lot of drama, a lot of conflict. But anyway, yesterday I finally went in for a procedure because I had to have, you might recall, a second extraction next to the first one, which the second dentist agreed with my first dentist, yeah, this should be done. Because there was an infection under a tooth that had already had a root canal. And I won't go into the whole protracted spiel about how I think when you get root canal, that should be it. Because apparently that's not it. You can have a re-root canal. Then you can have the whole thing taken out and replaced. And you could spend literally $20,000 on a single tooth. And when you multiply that by 32, which I believe is the number of teeth in our heads, think of all the money in your head there.
It's a living.
Yeah, it really is. And that's not even putting gold things on top of your teeth, which a lot of people do.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
So anyway, so yesterday I had to have a second tooth extracted before they actually start with the implant. So it's going to be a double implant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, if you get a permit to build an apartment complex.
It's a duplex.
You wait for the second permit to come through next door so you can build both apartment complexes at once.
Yeah, actually, it's not a duplex because they're not connected. That would be a small bridge.
Yeah.
But this is two distinct implants.
I decided not to go for the bridge. Implant is a better deal.
Yeah, bridge is a game.
Here's the thing. So I'm at the dentist yesterday, and I keep remembering the worst dental appointment I had in my life was last October. We documented this on the show. And I was thinking about that, where I was gagging when they had all these things down my throat. And I don't know, something mentally must have just hit me because I could not get started yesterday at this new dentist. If I even opened my mouth a little bit, I started gagging without anything even happening. It was really embarrassing. I said, I don't know what's going on. This has never happened to me before, but it's like a mental thing. And so they had to calm me down. They actually gave me oxygen in my nose. You know, those little things that old people wear, which actually is quite pleasant. You know, you ever have one? You can breathe really easily, and that might have helped.
Yeah, I'm building one. I have like a little DIY project I'm doing
for the future. Okay, good, good.
Yeah.
So they did all that, and so I have another extraction. I'm still recovering from it. Happy to say I'm off painkillers because it doesn't hurt anymore.
So, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And I can save all the painkillers I have now for something down the road.
Yeah, break them down.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. Yeah.
Or I could sell them. but you're not supposed to do that.
To squirrels.
Yeah. So
there's
anyway,
a huge epidemic with the squirrels out there.
Not to belabor the point. It's just I have all these things going on. I've got eye doctor appointments and just everything you could possibly imagine. Because I realized, you know what, let's do everything. Let's do all the things that you've been putting off.
Well, it's important to maintain stuff that you enjoy using and eating. Eating's one of those things, so I'm happy that you're using the time to take advantage of something like that. It's that basic thing, but it's like it's right in front of you. I have so many puns for this.
Well, I mean, I can't really do a lot of eating now because I have this healing process going on one side of my mouth, so I have to avoid that completely. You know, I can have some things. We had pasta. Oh my God. All right, I just got to say, Kyle makes the best pasta in the world, and I don't care.
Stop.
No, nobody in Italy would step up to you on this. They would all agree with me, all right?
I don't
care. The Italian grandmother's out there. No, this is the best pasta
ever.
I
don't want any trouble.
Don't even try and challenge Kyle on this. He will defeat you and embarrass you.
It's always different.
It was
I'm learning.
Amazing. It was the most amazing thing, and the only thing I'm angry about is that we ran out of it.
It was linguine. And then
was garlic in there?
I did garlic that was cooked in the olive oil while the noodles were rinsing.
The perfect texture, you know.
And then I had buttery asparagus water that I drained over the noodles.
Every strand was independent. None of them stuck together.
Yeah, yeah. And then I threw them back in with the oil and the garlic, and it was really fragrant, and that was great. And then we had asparagus. That was a good.
That was good. That was good. That was good healing. So anyway, that's why I've been just busy not getting back to people. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because, you know, the circumstances are really odd. Odd circumstances to have been running an event and to, you know, getting on with things. But it is, what else do we have to do? I mean, there's a lot of power in being able to move ahead in the face of everything, and we've been working really hard. You've been working incredibly hard. We don't forget to mention produced an issue for the magazine as well, and we're continuing to perfect the radio station setup and get our production down, and and that all takes a fair amount of time. But you don't want to waste time, especially when there's a bit of respite after having done so much. So it's great to take a bit of a breather and don't let any kind of health things go. So all of our listeners, please, if you can, you know, safely visit your doctors, visit, you know, take care of things and take care of yourselves.
Well,
that's important.
That's the thing. In a pandemic, how do you do this?
It's hard.
Yeah, so, you know, how do you go to a dentist? You have to take the damn mask off, obviously. But medical facilities, they know what they're doing. They take precautions, probably one of the safest places you could be in. They don't want you going in until the person before you goes out, so you basically have to sit in your car and call them. But, you know, it's fine. These are things that make you safer.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. So, yeah, be prepared to adapt.
Yeah.
There's obviously going to be a heightened awareness for the possibility of illness, but it's also it's something that you know, like, should be reassuring about attending to your health, that there are steps being taken. So that's good to hear, and that makes sense as a simple way to do it.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, it's not funny, but it is funny. This is not something that liberals want. We don't want to have to sit in our cars and wait for the person before us in the doctor's office to leave the facility before we can walk in. Why in God's name would we want that? It's bizarre, it's ridiculous, it's inconvenient, but it's what we have to do.
You don't get to read the magazines.
We are, yeah, that's another plus. Yeah, I'll get my highlights somewhere else. Does that still come out?
Highlights for kids, I'm sure. Maybe.
How is that possible? I mean, kids have changed over the years. They don't have the same sense of humor.
Maybe they rebranded it or something. I remember that when I was a kid.
Everybody remembers that when they were a kid.
Yeah,
Benjamin Franklin remembers that when he was a kid. Anyway, the point is, you are accused of all kinds of things when you're standing up for science, when you're standing up for staying healthy. And we're seeing it more and more, and it really, it's like I said, funny, but it's really tragic at the same time. There is nobody that I know who would want this, who is enjoying this, but we recognize it's essential. And when we go someplace, whether it's to get takeaway or whether it's to do something that involves being around other people, going to a supermarket or some other place. And the rules are clear and everybody is following them. Everyone's wearing a mask, keeping their distance. You know what I feel after that? I feel a sense of pride. I feel a sense of community, like we are taking care of each other. It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling to know that the people around you care about you. And, you know, when you walk down the street and you see people, like, you know, when we go to Port Jefferson sometimes, and we see people who just don't care, they're just no mask for them because it doesn't apply to them, and we have to walk in the middle of the street literally to avoid them. And, yeah, it's rude, and I hope they get the message. But that's not a feeling of pride. That's
insulting.
It's frustrating. Yeah, it really is. So, I don't know. We just see so much of this pushback now that I don't understand. And I know where it's coming from. I mean, if you look at the top office in the country, you see that Trump just doesn't care anymore. Well, first of all, we found out he literally is a murderer last week.
Is this the Rage release excerpts from Bob Woodward's
book? Yeah, from the Bob Woodward book. Bob Woodward book, that's hard to say. From the new book by Bob Woodward, yeah. It's basically, it contains recordings. Well, the book doesn't contain recordings, but he has presented recordings of Trump actually saying way back early, what was it, January?
Yeah.
That he knows how dangerous this virus is. And he doesn't want to start a panic by telling people how dangerous this virus is. And, you know, there's a part of me that says, okay, I can understand, you know, taking a low-key approach. But then you act on what you know. And instead of doing that, what he did was kind of pretend it didn't exist at all. In other words, he didn't tell people what he knew so they wouldn't panic. But then he didn't tell himself what he knew so he wouldn't panic. And basically lived in a fantasy land and took us all along for the ride. So literally hundreds of thousands of people have either been infected or died as a direct result of his inaction. There is no getting around that. You cannot sugarcoat this and say, oh, well, you know, it has not been proven. The science is not conclusive. No, it's very conclusive. It has been proven. And everybody knows this. The question is, do they have enough courage to actually say something about it? For instance, let's look at Lee Zeldin, our representative here in Long Island. He won't say anything because he's basically a puppet of Trump. We'll never criticize him, no matter what. And, of course, there are people who will criticize Trump no matter what he does, even if he does something right. But that doesn't happen that often, so it is fair to criticize him on this. It is fair to hold him accountable on this. And look what's happening. It's still going on. Yesterday, in Nevada. Was it yesterday or was it the day before? No, it was Sunday. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's coming out towards this area, I think.
Oh, he better not come here.
I think that's part of this travel excursion.
All right, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, we need to find out.
We'll get to that in a second. We're going to talk about that. But he was in Arizona, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
Nevada the day before. Okay.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care anymore. He's holding indoor rallies. No social distancing, no masks, or masks are optional, but if you wear a mask, you're a sissy, so you know, no one's going to do that. And literally putting these people in harm's way. They don't care. That doesn't make it any less harmful, less horrible what he's doing. Basically, people that don't know any better, people that will follow him. You know, during the Republican convention, I saw one of his followers, this is what they aired during the convention. It wasn't just a random person, it was somebody they were proud of, who said he'd run through a brick wall for Trump. I mean, come on, who would you run through a brick wall for? It doesn't even make any sense. But literally, people will do things like that. And I'm not misusing the word literally. They will literally do that. And here, they are literally putting their lives in jeopardy. And when he was asked about this at one of those indoor rallies, he replied to the concern saying, oh, you know, they're far away from me, I'm safe. That's all he cares about, himself. He doesn't care about them. They're all crammed next to each other without masks. They haven't been tested. You don't know what's going to happen to them, but, you know, like Herman Cain, I'm sure some will die. And he will be responsible. He does not care at all. So that is, how would you describe that, Kyle? Negligent homicide. There's no other word for it.
Yeah, it's really a selfish attitude. And, not considerate.
That's putting it very mildly. Yeah.
Well, I can't say what I want to say on the.
You can just use different words or make up words.
But I only know a few words to apply to this scenario, and they're all words that aren't allowed.
Tell your governor to open up your state, by the way, Trump says to the Nevada audience. Open up your state. You have a governor who is a political hack. So this is what they do. They turn it around so that the Democratic governors who are doing the right thing are somehow blamed for everything that goes wrong. You know, I watch News 12 a lot, and I see Long Islanders, and Long Island is a terrible place for liberal people. Promising, but terrible right now. I saw one guy who was loading up his truck with something, I don't know what, out in Suffolk County, saying that he blames Cuomo and de Blasio for all of it. First of all, de Blasio is the mayor of New York City. Why are you blaming de Blasio when you live in Suffolk County? You know why? Because you're watching Fox News and you see those people criticized all the time, and you just buy into it. And you start saying Democrat Party instead of Democratic Party. You just do everything they tell you to do.
Like
a
lemming.
You don't think it through. All right? And look at New York right now. We had, I think, one death the other day, zero deaths before that. We're doing well. We want zero infection, zero deaths, but we are doing well. Stony Brook is open. We talked about this last week where, you know, if more people got infected, Stony Brook would have to close. Well, they didn't, and Stony Brook is open. I drove through Stony Brook yesterday, actually. I haven't actually walked around on campus since the spring, but, you know, I had some time where I was waiting for a prescription to be filled, and I figured I'd just drive around and see how the old campus is doing. And I got to say, I did not see one unmasked person. I am so proud of the people at Stony Brook. They are doing the right thing. I saw those hospitals on the athletic fields, the emergency hospitals that were built in a matter of weeks in the spring to deal with an onslaught, which thankfully didn't come and hopefully will never come. But if it does, we're prepared. If it doesn't, those right-wing people are going to mock you. They're going to say, oh, look what you did. You built all the stuff you didn't need. You wasted all this money. I am thankful. I am thankful the forces in charge wasted that money, if that's what it is.
Even if it was a drill, it would have been worth it,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, if you just look at that as like, okay, let's practice building this emergency hospital and additional space, like, it would be worth it in that context. So why, when the thing is actually at your doorstep and the federal government's throwing up their hands saying the states need to handle it, and denying it at the same time, yeah, I think it's worth it at that moment, because you do realize you're on your own as a state and a region. And if it had gone worse, then, you know, that thing really would have been vital to
yeah.
to keeping at least whoever was left healthy and the disease somewhat at bay or under some kind of control.
Don't get me wrong. There's plenty to criticize Cuomo and de Blasio about. I don't blindly follow anybody. But on this, yeah, the missteps at the beginning, sure. Who hasn't had missteps at the beginning? And anyone in charge? There might be a few people, but most people got it wrong at first. If you look at the early Cuomo press conferences, he's downplaying it. He's doing the same thing that Trump said he was going to do, not have people panic. But in the end, he took action, took strong action, and continues to take strong action. Yeah, the people who own gyms, they're angry at him because they're going out of business, but they shouldn't be going out of business. That should not be allowed to happen. They should not have to pay rent. They should not have to pay taxes. They should be able to put themselves on hold, be taken care of until this is over, and then resume their businesses. I don't know why that isn't just assumed. It happens in other countries. It should happen here. You know, the bowling alley in Smithtown, they had to shut down. We talked about this on the other radio show. What's the difference between them going out of business and them just stopping until this is over and then resuming? Why can't they do that? If they have no expenses until then why is that a bad idea? What's the difference between them resuming their business and the building being empty and then somebody else coming in and starting the exact same business because we know it works there? You know, it's really bizarre. You look at the major corporations, the chain stores, the ones that have shut down, they are not paying rent. So why should you be paying rent? All the big chains are not paying rent if they shut down their stores. Their stores are still there. They intend to go back to them, but they're not paying rent while they're not using them. So, you know, if the rules apply for the rich people, then they should apply to everybody else. And what's ironic is Trump followers say things like that, but they seem to turn a blind eye when they realize that Trump is the very person that would be against that. It's really kind of nuts. So you basically have people's lives being put in jeopardy, and yet the person trying to protect them, whether it be a governor, a mayor, whatever, they get blamed for the inconvenience, while the person who is pushing them into harm's way is revered. You know, to me, that speaks of cultish behavior. And I think many people have been describing the Republican Party as a death cult, and it literally is becoming that. I don't know how better to describe it. It sounds awfully harsh, but people are dying because they're not paying attention to the facts. These numbers don't lie. We're closing in on 200,000 Americans who have died since this began earlier this year. Not even through the year. They said by the end of the year it'll be 400,000. Do we care anymore? Does that mean nothing to us? Do those lives not matter? I mean, they're more Trump-based than any other base, I would think.
Truly, truly. It's stunning that there's that level of stubbornness. I don't know. I mean, I it's hard to comprehend. I don't think there's... It defies logic. I don't think there really is an explanation other than the populism and the charismatic leadership that people are sort of addicted to. It's become a brand, it's become an ideology and I guess movement, but it's really disrespectful of outside views, and I've never been down with it, but I just find it wholly insulting to the system that a lot of other people are trying to participate in, and it's sort of shameful that people can't come around and have a little bit of, I guess the word's hubris, or just hat in hand and maybe say, like, yeah, we overplayed this one. But that's never going to happen. We've gone over all of these things over and over, these milestones that are seemingly the new low, or the lowest of how far the depths of the depravity will take us. But, I mean, we cease to see a bottom. It is an abyss of depravity.
Well, Joe Biden's campaign manager attacked Donald Trump, his team, for the packed rallies they've recently resumed, warning that people will die because of the acute risk of coronavirus transmissions at the largely maskless events. In a political playbook interview, whatever that is, Jennifer O'Malley Dillon pointed to indoor campaign events that Trump has held in recent days in direct contradiction with the coronavirus guidelines of his own administration. She also brought up the packed event on the South Lawn of the White House, where Trump celebrated the normalization of relations between Israel, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates. Okay, I'm just going to speak on that for a second. It sounds nice to have countries agreeing not to attack each other in the Middle East, but these are countries that were never at war. So it really doesn't do a whole lot at all. If you don't include the Palestinians, that's where the main conflict is. Solve that problem and you got something. Bahrain? Whoever went to war with Bahrain? I mean, I'm sure somebody did at some point, but Israel's not staying up nights worrying about them, or the United Arab Emirates. So now, okay, you can make phone calls to them. Big deal. You still are an occupying force. I think what's happening here is that you're getting all the dictatorial regimes together, and you're forming an alliance. So, okay, we're basically setting things up for a regional war at some point where Israel won't be feeling left out. they'll be on one of the sides. Come on. This is obviously being done to bolster Trump's foreign policy image. Are we naive enough to buy this? I sure hope not. Anyway.
I'm not.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. Anyway, O'Malley Dillon, that's the Biden campaign manager, she called today's signing ceremony another day-after-day episode showing the fact that the President of the United States is taking guidelines from medical experts about what to do in a pandemic to stay safe and help make sure your colleagues and neighbors are safe and not executing it at the White House. She added she was horrified to see pictures from the day before, yesterday, of about 100 Trump supporters packed into a ballroom in Arizona, mostly maskless, for an event billed as a roundtable by a campaign. It wasn't really a round table, was it?
It's like a semicircle.
Well, maybe for him it was, but all the people packed in the auditorium wasn't for them.
Oh, no, that was like standing room only mosh pit.
People will die because of these types of events, and that's from the President of the United States. And you look at folks that might not be wearing masks or aren't taking this seriously, and you understand how that's the case. Well, there's so much more we can say. But, Kyle, you mentioned something about, what, Trump trying this crap out here? No, that's not going to happen.
I just heard that there was a stop on this latest campaign rally tour that he may come out here. And what he'll probably do is avoid Manhattan and end up in Suffolk County somewhere. But I don't know his schedule, and I don't really care, but I wouldn't be surprised. I thought that was on the itinerary. He may have already...
I cannot think of when phoning in a bomb threat would be considered a patriotic act. No, but seriously, phoning in a bomb threat would be a patriotic act because you'd be evacuating a place where people will catch a disease and saving lives. Anything that would stop something like that from happening. I am upset that the governors of Arizona and Nevada just threw up their hands and said, oh, this is bad, you're violating our laws. Why don't you do something about it? Why don't you send your whatever police force you have, surround that building, do something symbolic, have a confrontation. Yeah, it'll be nasty. Nasty words will be said, but you've got to do something other than say, I condemn this, I'm going to launch an investigation, I'm going to file a bill. It's gotten beyond that. They certainly are playing beyond that. We need to start playing beyond that as well.
Yeah, they said it wasn't allowed, and then the campaign just completely flouted it.
Yeah,
right?
So what, are you just a caretaker
what
for Trump?
What,
do you govern or don't you govern? And I don't think Cuomo is going to let Trump just roll in here and do whatever he wants. He said you're going to need an army to protect you, and he literally will need an army to protect him if he tries that crap out here. And by out here, I mean the Northeast. Not Suffolk County, I don't know. I have my doubts. There's certainly enough these idiots driving pickup trucks with huge flags. We saw one the other day. Did you want to describe?
Yeah, it was going like 90 on.
Oh, no, that was the other one. Okay, yeah.
Oh,
you're talking
sorry.
About the 90. No, I was talking about the one
that passed that, in oncoming traffic on at the top of a crest of a hill.
Crest of a hill, big pickup truck, huge Trump flags, more than one, and apparently the car doing the speed limit in front of them wasn't going fast enough, so they went around them on a two-lane road with cars coming up the hill. I mean, what is wrong with these people? They are intimidating.
Those wheels are so wide, too, they don't even really fit in the road.
They don't fit on the road. Why is that legal?
It's totally obnoxious and a menace, really.
You know, you're driving down a narrow country road, and their tires are over the double yellow line because they don't fit. What happens if they meet somebody like them going the other way?
I have no idea.
Kind of like to see that, actually. Anyway.
It's like two black holes that subsume one another.
Yeah. It's
a sucking vortex.
You know, it's 7 weeks away.
The election?
Seven weeks away. I've never seen anything like this. I've never imagined anything like this. You know, the only thing that I think that can get us through this in a somewhat peaceful, calm way is if Biden wins really big.
Big.
Really big, like, you know, 10, 20 percentage points. Because less than that, and Trump is not going to go.
It's got to be above 5%.
He's going to claim this fraud. He's going to claim that mail-in somehow did him in. And you're going to have the idiots in the pickup trucks doing all kinds of terrible things. They've proven they don't care about their own personal safety. They certainly don't care about the personal safety of people around them. The only thing that is going to basically quell that is a strong statement. Not just a statement. Not just edging somebody out. A strong, decisive statement. We cannot be afraid. We cannot be simply hiding and hoping it all goes away, because it won't. And the reason it's here in the first place is because that's what we did before. We just thought it would go away instead of getting out there and fighting. I don't mean fighting with guns and getting killed and killing other people. No, that kind of stuff is not how our fights are waged. We saw the terrible story of those cops being ambushed in Los Angeles. And I just found it so... well, first of all, I don't know anybody. I know a lot of people in BLM and other activists, and I don't know a single person that was not horrified by that. And yet, if you watch the mass media, somehow they tie that in to the anti-police brutality demonstrations. as if the two have anything to do with each other. That is such an ignorant assumption. So to basically say any time something bad happens to cops, it's the fault of the people who criticize police abuse. Do you realize how ignorant that is? And how that basically tells people they shouldn't criticize. They shouldn't stand up against injustice. You had the LASD. There's LAPD and LASD, the Sheriff's Department. I didn't really know about this. They tweeted out something which was so offensive, basically saying that there are all these demonstrators blocking access to the emergency room, saying that they hope the cops will die, making it seem like there are these terrible people out there, awful people that nobody would, in their right mind, would support. When in actuality, yeah, there was a few sickos out there, maybe 3, 4, 5 at the most, but they decided to politicize it and turn it into something and try and make it so that this attack on police was an attack by the demonstrators that are fighting for fairness, for a lack of brutality. It was a terrible thing to do. Absolutely awful, dishonest thing to do. They arrested a reporter who was actually covering that scene. And just to be fair here, those people who are out there, misguided people saying terrible things, a handful or less, they weren't anywhere near the emergency room, so that was false too. And the hundreds of thousands of people who marched against police brutality were all hoping those cops would be okay. Because this kind of thing is not how we fight our fights.
And they know what it does. It erodes the movement. It erodes the actual progress that people are trying to make.
Well, yeah.
It's not a way to handle it.
It's not ever considered a tactic, I don't think.
It's not humane.
No, it's absolutely awful, and it's got nothing to do with this. And I'm sure when it's found out, the perpetrator will have nothing to do with the actual movement. I mean, of course not. So it's just really dismaying to see that the people are being led along this this false narrative that somehow this is related when it's obviously not. All right, what else? This guy, Michael Caputo, oh my God. Top spokesman, Department of Health and Human Services. He's basically confirmed that he made some comments during a Facebook Live event on Sunday might have been a bit much. He said the drills that you've seen are nothing. If you carry guns, buy ammunition, ladies and gentlemen, because it's going to be hard to get. He accused people trying to undermine President Trump of sedition. He just went on, said all kinds of terrible things. He said he's been under pressure at work. He said the Facebook Live event was done in his personal capacity, not as part of his job, and he's done them for years. But basically, it's led to calls for his resignation. A lot of calls for his resignation. Mr. Caputo has claimed that the president personally put him in charge of his $250 million advertising campaign intended to help America to get back to normal. We now know this is a propaganda campaign that must be defunded immediately. It is not the mission of the Department of Health and Human Services to get the president reelected. That's according to Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut. In addition, Democrats on the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis sent a letter to HHS Secretary Alex Azar seeking to interview Caputo and other top HHS officials regarding efforts by the Trump administration to block the publication of accurate scientific reports related to the coronavirus crisis. There are a lot of wackos in charge of things now, and it's scary. And it's something that we have to focus on, expose, and deal with.
It's going to be a big part of the repair work, assuming a Biden victory in November and a new administration in January. There will be first 100-day lists of things that were undone that need to be just a baseline back in order, back on the books. And I really hope that citizenry and concerned advocates really keep a good memory, or at least pull up what tracking we've done over the last 4 years to initiate some of those repairs. And then perhaps simultaneously look at what else is needed to address where we're suffering publicly right now as well.
Yeah.
It will be really important. It will be really, really important stuff.
Yeah, it should be. The important thing is to keep paying attention. And that's something that it's easy to throw up your hands in despair and not want to deal with any more of this. But it's so essential that we take an interest. Because when you don't take an interest, somebody else does. And that's never a good thing.
There's a lot to be optimistic about and a lot of engagement and just talk, have conversations, do things that make you feel good, and don't get caught up in too much of the drama and the stuff that's meant to get a reaction and evoke sort of negativity. There's mm-hmm. there's a lot to build and a lot to build upon. We just have to coordinate and communicate. And so hopefully that's been informative and a bit of an update, but I think we have to move on. There's a different section. Oh,
there we go.
You read my mind.
Yes, it's once again time for our sustaining feature films of the year that was, where we journey back into time, and what else would you journey back into? Review Academy Award-winning films from the beginning of the Academy Awards until the present, which we won't get to for quite some time. We are up to 1979, as mentioned. We saw the foreign film last week, and we saw the domestic film this week. The domestic film, Kyle Bean?
Yes, oh, you must mean the American legal drama written and directed by Robert Benton.
I was hoping for a title.
Kramer versus Kramer.
Now, just to address this right away so people aren't disappointed, it does not have Kramer from Seinfeld in it.
No, that no relation.
Well, I kept asking when is he going to make an appearance. It wasn't until the closing credits that I realized it's a different Kramer.
Very, very funny.
No, it's in New York City. I mean, Kramer in New York City? How many? Okay.
Anyway, starring Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep, Jane Alexander, and Justin Henry. Introducing Justin Henry.
Justin Henry played the adorable kid.
Yes, this is another adorable kiddo film.
Yeah, but he won an Oscar.
He was very... Was it almost?
Did he win the Oscar or was he nominated?
He was nominated. And nearly won, but did not. But it would have been the youngest winner ever.
But I think he's still the youngest nominee ever.
Youngest nominee, I think, is to his credit.
For supporting actor.
And he really was a supporting actor. There was some really endearing moments between him.
Well, he was making French toast with his dad.
Dustin Hoffman.
He fell off a monkey bar and right smack into his head.
Smashes his face. And
that's a sacrifice to make.
Yep.
Special effects? I guess they could have done special effects, but what, you're suggesting that he didn't really fall? Well, you know, it's acting. You don't know. You don't know what he did. I think he really fell. It looked convincing to me.
Mainly,
right?
Though, the work they did with him and just the genuine personality that came through. He had started out early on with a little bit more like the too polished look, and I know in some of the commentary we were learning about how basically he eventually became comfortable and was able to learn the dialogue quickly and deliver it in a really sort of natural adult way, which is really unusual, especially for like a 6-year-old. I think he was six.
Was he six? I think it was more like nine.
He was super young.
He was young, but they, you know, somebody that young, you kind of can play tricks on, and Dustin Hoffman was kind of a bastard, and he basically, there's a scene where the kid had to cry. And basically, Dustin Hoffman, right before that scene, told him, you know, the film's going to be over soon, and you're not going to see any of these people again, probably ever. Really turned the waterworks on, and he did a great scene, but boy, he was actually upset.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, he's telling him he's never going to see the film operator again, and, like, the camera operator's, like, right behind the camera filming his kid, and he's staring at him. So I thought those anecdotes are great, but the story itself is about a woman who leaves the husband with this child after so long because he's a very self-absorbed or career-minded type.
So she leaves him and the kid.
It's true, yes. And that is a cardinal sin of women and mothers everywhere, I'm told. And that is what leads to him kind of this burgeoning, blossoming single parenthood that Dustin Hoffman takes on and carries through for, I believe, 18 months, and that is when Meryl Streep returns. And drama and waterworks ensue. There is a lot there, and their love is tested and retested, and I think she tries to take custody and eventually doesn't. She wins and then doesn't.
You think she tries to take, that's the whole point of the film. Yeah, she tries to take custody. Kramer versus Kramer.
I wasn't finished saying. She tries to take custody, wins, and then doesn't even really want to go through.
Okay,
it. She's not happy with what she gets.
By the way, spoiler alerts, people. We're ruining the entire film for you. But yes, that's what happened.
What we do.
We should warn people first. But yes, I took exception with that because it was a great courtroom scene. And again, you know, Dustin Hoffman and others did all kinds of things to get people to act emotionally. Like I said, he's a bit of a bastard. Meryl Streep, as people might remember, was involved with an actor named John Cazale. He was Fredo in Godfather. He was in Dog Day Afternoon. He was in, what was the film we just
Deer
saw
Hunter.
Him in? Deer Hunter, yes. And he was dying of cancer, too. In fact, when this film was made, he had just died. And Meryl Streep was involved with him, and Dustin Hoffman kept mentioning his name before an emotional scene to her to get her to cry. I mean, that's going over the line. I mean, it's not going over the line with a kid, too, but it was a little funny with him. But not you know, that was just, I think, wrong. The courtroom scene was good. It was realistic and emotional. Meryl Streep wrote her own lines because... The original screenplay was written by a man, didn't really work, wasn't really expressed the way a woman would talk, so she wrote her own dialogue, and it was so much better. And in the end, the court found for the mother, despite the fact that she left, went to California to find herself, and found herself, and came back, and wanted the kid back, despite the fact Dustin Hoffman was a good father, really trying hard, sacrificing promotions at work, And where is it said that a father's love for a child is not as vital as a mother's love, the court still went the traditional route and found for the mother. So you have this emotional conclusion where the kid's waiting for the mother to pick him up and take him to his new home. And then in the lobby of the apartment building, Meryl Streep just has a change of heart. Says she realized that, you know, she came there to bring her son home and realized he was already home. I could have done without that ending. I thought that was just, why are you making this a happy ending? It was perfect. It was injustice. It was unfairness. It was life. And then you sugarcoated at the end an ending that would never happen in real life.
I see that. No, you have a point. You have a point. It was too cutesy, too neatly packaged and rounded off.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't care for that. It was well done, but I just didn't care for that. But otherwise, it's kind of dated. In some ways, this film is very dated. For instance, Dustin Hoffman loses his job and he's in the middle of a custody hearing. You have to have a job if you want to retain your kid. It's right before Christmas, so he basically has to get a job that Friday or he loses the case. And there's no way he can wait until Monday because that's a holiday. And then the hearing happens after that, so he's got to get a job that day. He goes to this firm, and he sells himself. He's overqualified.
He's at the holiday party.
And the holiday party for the company is going on right outside the office, and he's saying, you know, you have to decide now. It's a one-day offer. Do you want me or not? And in the end, the pressure works. He gets the job. And then he does something that you could never do today, but this tells how much culture has changed. He goes out into the holiday party and just finds this random woman and kisses her full on the mouth, told a stranger, walks away, leaving her smiling. I mean, come on, really? that was ever considered the right thing to do? But apparently, yeah, no problem with it back in the late 1970s. So, you know, when you're judging people for things they might have said, keep in mind the culture that existed then. Very, very different. And, wow, I was very surprised by that. I think you were a bit shocked too, right, Kyle?
Yeah. There's a lot of things that were done. I think that we've taken a hard look at or a lot of people have advocated and tried to do that, and that means that we need to understand that's not really the kind of behavior that is conducive to healthy working and creative environments in a workplace. So depicting it like that, I mean, it may have been unintentional. They may not have even realized the kind of connotations. And it's good, I find, as a consumer of media, to look at it again, and it does leap out. It's glaring when you see that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because it slipped in, and you don't know, like, is that intentional? They're definitely building a type of person, a persona
and
around the character.
If you find yourself drawn into the story, you'll find yourself saying, oh, yeah, that's funny, even though you realize, wait a minute, that's really not funny. Yeah. But if you allow yourself to be transported back into that time, you might see what it felt like, and you might get fooled for a second. And that, I think, is valuable to be able to understand that. But those things aside, it was a good film. It a lot of New York scenes, which I always enjoy, kind of a different film than the ones we've been seeing. Not so much an epic. One thing that was rather interesting: the producers at the time seemed to think they were telling a neutral story, where they weren't taking one side over another. And I thought they were pretty much taking the guy's side over the woman's side, very obviously, making him the good guy who bonds with the kid, and the mother, somebody who just flees. You don't see anything that she's doing until she comes back demanding the kid. How is that? That's not equal treatment. You don't really see the reasons why she left. You just hear it said. So it's funny, the sense of fairness, I think, was different back then than it would be now. I don't think this film could come out today and people would say, yeah, that's a fair and balanced way of looking at the conflict between these two people. No, it would be seen as lopsided.
Well, what if the roles were reversed, though? I mean, a guy kind of walking out on a single mother, or creating a scenario where there's a single mother, and then he tries to swoop back in later in life when things maybe have become normal, and there's sort of an animosity and unfinished and irrevocable business. I mean, you would say, like, oh, well, he's just, you know, trying to earn a living, or I don't know. There'd be all sorts of excuses.
In which period? That period or this period?
I would say in that period.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it was
definitely, it was a phenomenon.
It was a male-dominated era, so
right.
Obviously, yeah, the
so
male gets the advantage.
So they're sort of maybe trying to communicate some sort of reversal where she's got to go out and find herself. And the way she describes it is a lot more like, I didn't know who I was. I wasn't, you know, able to cope, and she did. She
no, and that, those are fair things to say. But the way it was presented, you didn't get a chance to really explore who she was.
It's easy
to dismiss it.
Well, and it's also more introspective than like the father walking out. Like, he wouldn't come back and be like, "Well, I was just on a spiritual quest." You just assume he's out like being a dog or whatever.
Uh huh. Well, that's our film for this year, 1979. We move on to 1980. Hopefully next week, and we'll tell
the
people.
80s.
Yeah. Films of the year that was. Okay, you know, schools have closed in two Nassau districts because of COVID-19. Five schools across two Nassau County districts, Port Washington and Oyster Bay East Norwich, were closed today due to positive COVID-19 cases among students at each building. The reports of COVID-19 cases involving students and staff have emerged in the second to third weeks since schools reopened on Long Island as the state began running a website to track coronavirus cases in schools. So this story is still very much ongoing. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but this is the period where it's going to hit the fan one way or another.
Watch out for sickos.
Yeah. Hurricane Sally. Hurricane Sally is right now bearing down in Alabama.
Okay, she's landed in New Orleans?
I don't think she hit New Orleans.
Okay, so she veered and followed the latest
track. There's a bit of veering going on, but the thing is, we're up to S. And remember, Hurricane Sandy, a number of years ago, that hit in October, or Superstorm Sandy, as people like to call it. So we're ahead. We're ahead of that. And we're running out of letters. And there's only a few left. There's only Teddy, Vicky, and Wilfred. Now, I'm angered by this because apparently there's no names that the Atlantic hurricanes are named for U, for X, for Y, or for Z. And I can come up with names for U, for X, for Y, and Z. And I don't think it's fair that you just skip over four perfectly good letters, and then they move on to I believe Greek letters or something, alpha and beta and things like that.
I like Hurricane Xavier.
Yeah, that's an X. You could totally do that. So write to the World Meteorological Organization and insist that they add letters that are left out. I don't think it's fair.
And Hurricane Uber.
Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade won't have live spectators this year. And in fact, I don't even know why they're doing this at all. They're going to have it along a single block. It'll be produced over 2 days in a one-block stretch of 34th Street in front of Macy's flagship store in Herald Square. This is just so pathetic.
Oh,
come on.
God,
what,
give
are you
up.
You're going to blow up all the balloons and then just not go anywhere with them and just stand there like idiots? Come on. There's so many other things. You've got the money. Do something else. Do something, you know, flyovers in space. I don't know. Give us a day and we'll come up with better ideas than this.
Hand out vaccines.
And speaking of space... this story, which we should have led with, astronomers find possible sign of life on Venus.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Now we're talking.
You realize the surface of Venus is 800 degrees.
Traces of a rare molecule known as phosphine have been found in the hellish, heavily acidic atmosphere of Venus. Astronomers announced this yesterday. And that is somewhat exciting. It's a rare gas called phosphine in the atmosphere of our neighbor planet, Venus. And the reason for our excitement, they say, is that phosphine gas on Venus, on Earth, rather, is made by microorganisms that live in oxygen-free environments. So there's a chance we have detected some kind of living organism in the clouds of Venus. And with that, we're going to have to leave you for this week. Question being, how much more of this can we bear? Well... 7 weeks? I guess we'll find out. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Good night.
So long.
The last weeks of the war left me wondering how much more could the loveliest creature bear. I'm not ruined, but I need repair. How much more? All the passion in my bones runs down the gutter to the sea.
If I try to tell you how I feel, I'm scared I might disappear. The cold redoubt. Jacket has arrived. I'll try it on for size.
Take the shine of the gold. Frozen bodies locked away.
I wipe the tapes, but they keep playing. They haunt me another day.